Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in the series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version.
Explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Madisonville, Kentucky, where we're having a nice Scottish summer of about 44 degrees, a little bit of rain, a little bit of wind. That's all good for you. On the solar weather, sunspot 939 burst onto the scene yesterday, growing from an invisible speck to a Neptune-sized active region in less than 24 hours. The sunspot's magnetic field does not yet harbor energy for strong solar flares, but this could change if rapid growth continues. Amateur astronomers with solar telescopes, and by the way, if you don't own one, I highly recommend the Coronado scope. It's very affordable, and if you've never looked at the sun through one of these telescopes, you will be amazed at what you see. It, believe me, no still photograph can do it justice. you will be fascinated by what you see. Anyway, popping out of the twilight with a peacock tail that amazes even experienced astronomers, it is visible from all parts of the southern hemisphere. And the solar wind tonight is a mild 469.1 kilometers per second. No solar flares at the moment. In the news, I think you already know that Nancy Pelosi has announced a new council on global warming. This has been met with a little consternation by her counterparts and certainly by those on the other side of the aisle. But nevertheless, she is pushing forward. Most of my counterparts in the scientific industry are fairly convinced that the data is beginning to line up now, showing that global warming is, in fact, occurring. We do have a little bit of debate on that as to whether the net temperature of the Earth is actually going up or if it just seems that way here in the northern hemisphere while those in the southern hemisphere are getting hammered with record snowfalls and record cold. The data is unclear, but it is clear that the weather seems to be doing some very strange things. Yesterday, I was in Memphis, Tennessee. I was invited down there by one of my listeners, Bob McDowell, to the public library, and we had a very good, some called it a workshop, I call it a lecture. In any case, it was a great fun, and I want to extend my appreciation to their hospitality and for their fervor and desire to learn more. They are great Earth explorers, every one. We talked about the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, and I know many of you have had a lot of questions about it. Many of you have been emailing me. We are now in 2007, and we are heading for that incredible date of July 4th, which is when we're scheduled to depart out of Murmansk, Russia, on a icebreaker and head for a region near the North Pole that our team historians have determined is most likely to be a location of an opening into the inner Earth. Now, for the scientific community, this is for entertainment purposes only. Do you understand that? Okay, now you can come down off the ceiling. However, while we have these film crews with us and these great metaphysical teachers and scientists all rolled up into one for 13 days on an enclosed environment away from commercials and refrigerators with all kinds of tempting delights, they will be in an environment that the aficionados of inner Earth technology or inner Earth science, we believe that we will meet all of those conditions and that we will be able to perform a very good experiment. By putting all of the inputs and all of the receivers in place, we may be able to see something remarkable, and we may be able to get it on film. And if we do, trust me, it might be the greatest geological expedition in the history of the world. Now, those of you that are planning to go to the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles, the weekend of February 10th, I think you need to reconsider and cancel all other plans and go. I'm going to be speaking there on Sunday, but of course there'll be other great speakers there. My speech is free. You don't have to pay to get in. And we're going to release some information there that is going to change everything. We are moving forward, people, and the train has left the station, so you might as well climb on board and try to learn something very exciting. If we do catch something on film, it's going to make an incredible documentary. We are going to keep our phone lines open from the very beginning tonight, just a little open format, because our guest tonight, I will explain in a moment, before I let the cat out of the bag there. Here are the phone numbers, 877-876-5227, anywhere in the United States, 888-810-8322, anywhere in Canada, and anywhere else on planet, off planet, inside the planet, anywhere where you can reach a phone tower. The phone number is 530-876-3222. My guest tonight is a thinker beyond compare. If you remember reading the author Harold Percival, who published widely in the mid-20th century, wrote a book called Thinking and Destiny, not light reading for anyone, but definitely worth the read. If you can make your way through about 700 pages of absolute tremendous philosophy, you will come up to Ken Payne 101, and that is where we're going to pick up tonight. My guest, Ken Payne, is a personeer. He owns a company that does much more than your average employment matchmaker. He is a profiler extraordinaire. He is a philosopher, a writer, a tremendous individual with a lot of love in his heart and tremendous understanding, a psychic, a healer, an unbelievable personality. I absolutely could not go one more week knowing this man without putting him on the show. So please welcome with me tonight Ken Payne. How are you this evening?
Very good, Brooks. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. That was beautiful.
Well, I had to save some of the 3 hours. I could have gone on. Ken is in Evansville, Indiana, and I don't know what the weather is like up there, but it's usually colder than it is here. Ken, tell us just a snapshot, maybe 5 minutes or so, how you developed into a personeer. You started out in the Navy, right?
I'm going to clarify. I'm in Tell City, Indiana, which is about an hour from Evansville.
And, right.
I developed into a personeer. I believe I brought a lot of what I define as a personeer from past life experience. When I speak to somebody, when I have them, it's not their title, it's not their resume, it's the person. I like them or I don't. So I love most everyone. It's just that when you get into what personeering is about, it's simply empowering the person's best and bringing it out and bringing it forth. So I don't look at people as bodies. I'm like, oh, that's a female, or that's a male. I don't look at them as a plant manager or a CEO. To me, the person is the highest. That's no Buddhist concept. It is the person. That infinite, indescribable person. And to be a sounding board, to be with them in spirit, that deep connect, it's rare. So I believe it's going to become more popular.
So each person is rare, unique, and infinite, and eternal.
Very eternal. Always has been, always will be.
Well, let's before we get into the philosophy, and believe me, Earth Explorers, we are going to go past your imagination tonight, but we will do our very best to help you keep your arms inside the vehicle. We'll make sure that you arrive back at Earth intact. But I would like to know a little bit about, in this life, what built Ken Payne. What did you do when you were in the Navy?
When I was in the Navy, I was a hospital corpsman. It's enlisted, but it's the only enlisted corps there is. There's not enough NCOs to go around, so they train you to do things that you would normally be able to do in the civilian sector. Ship's doctor. My first tour of duty, coming out of boot camp, corps school, is great because I worked in a labor and delivery room.
Really?
Yeah, I got to view a lot of people coming into life. So I believe I'm blessed.
Well, I think that's a lot better duty than your average corpsman. Usually they're around when people are leaving this life, not coming in.
Exactly. It's a miracle. You see one person go into the delivery room, and two people come out. So women, to me, are very special. They're the spiritual portal upon which we have the opportunity to evolve our soul. So my hat goes off to women.
And mine, too. So how long were you in the Navy? Did you retire there, or?
I was in there for 10 years. My sea school, it's a little bit higher up than A school, it's a specialty school, was a surgical operating room technician. This is where I learned to anticipate the needs of the surgeon. So we had to study the actual textbooks, and you basically were trained to perform these surgeries on ships. Because not every ship has an MD.
Right.
After that, I went with the Marines, and I rediscovered duty. The emphasis on re, because I believe that I had it. I just needed to remember it.
All right. So, leaving the Navy, you go back to civilian life, and did you immediately go into the medical field, or did you try other fields?
Yeah, well, I went into become a hospital corpsman. I did the night school bit, got my master's degree in business administration. I remember this one doc, he was going, Ken, don't forget this. Getting is more important than having. And it really stuck with me that we take so much for granted. And so in that master's course, I ran across a three-star general, and he really just lit me on fire about potential. I was just inspired. I believe we're old soulmates, old kindred spirits, and it's like you're enamored by a man of that level of presence, that level of responsibility. And he taught me. He taught me a lot. He taught me visual communication, number one, and I still use it today.
What, all right.
You know, so what is success? Well, success is having a plan and having a goal, and the space between a plan and a goal is as big as you make it. And shorten the space between the plan and the goal is the word commitment. That's a passion. It's like a marriage.
I
see. Never give up. Discovering purpose and things of this nature. So that was General George Samet Jr. Guided by the King of Sweden, by the way. Love him. Still alive today.
Wow, that's great. So you had immediate success when you applied these principles in private life once you got out of the Navy?
No, I didn't, luckily, because I'd been successful in the arena that I was exploring. And lots of folks can attest to this. You know, you kind of thank your lucky stars that you weren't successful in certain arenas. I was basically a hospital administrator of a 100-plus medical doctor clinic in Madisonville, Kentucky, right down there where you're at right now. Trover Clinic.
I know where Trover Clinic is.
I had a humiliating experience. I let my ego get out of the way. Well, I was 30 years old, and I was the cock of the walk with an MBA, so still had not learned some very valuable lessons. So I'm thankful for it.
All right, so failure, and by your account, a humiliating failure, was a great teacher for you. Did it make you go back to the drawing board and reach a little deeper?
Yeah, I'd say that I've learned a lot more by my failures than I have by my successes.
As do most of us.
What I discovered there was to be a little bit not so serious. How many times have you been in a manufacturing plant or a organizational behavior, professional bureaucracy, and you get caught up into the groupthink, What I learned from that experience is not what you do, it's how you do it.
Sure.
So I learned to be softer instead of assertive.
Yes, even as talk radio hosts, we learned those lessons as well. So when did you decide that you were going to get in the job, in the profession, I hate to call it a job, in the profession, in the life work of empowering others to find their success?
Well, it was a survival tendency. I was not paying my bills. And I looked around the paper and I saw this advertisement for executive search. They call it executive recruiter. And I had a disdain for it right off the bat because it was involved in sales. And of course, I automatically, from past concepts of salespeople, said, well, you know, I really don't want to get into sales because how they will perceive me. Automatically, I'll have a monocle and they'll have a preconceived notion that they really won't see the real me. But to pay the bills, I decided I'd give it a whirl. I got into it. And automatically, people go, well, you're different than any other headhunter I've ever talked to. And I attribute a lot of that to the fact of the life influencing practice. I brought a lot of the care, the bedside manner, the deep connect, being a life influencing practitioner, into what I consider to be, and transformed into what I believe to be even that much more powerful in a person's life, and that was the ability to play some part in expanding their life. For in the past, I was usually, as you said, usually on the back end, and I could help them gently get better. But they were usually dying, or, you know. So this was an ability to expand the person, to empower a person. So wanting as deep a connect as I possibly could with them, I approached it from a more metaphysical, more spiritual, more real plane. And started peppering in some executive coaching models. Talking about life, existence, looking for patterns, getting the person to accept responsibility, that life wasn't happening to them. They were happening to life, to invigorate them on purpose, on their purpose. And to find clients that could resonate with that same message. You find that there's a deeper connect on the interview. It's not just another going through the motions interview. The individual is more alive. A lot of people come to me in transition from one job to another, or I'm recruiting them. This is a life change event, so I take the opportunity to really peel the onion on life. It's a gateway, so I use the transition of life change as a gateway to deeply connect to concepts like metaphysics and what's life about, and taking full responsibility. And in taking, in just bringing up the concept of taking full responsibility, that in itself separates a lot of people. There's a lot of people.
Well, sure.
Simply don't want to take that level of divine consciousness.
When someone gets to the point in their lives, and many of us, I think probably many people listening to this program via their computers while they're sitting at their place of employment or at home, have probably needed the services of a professional assistant to help them find employment. And that usually that moment where they need that assistance is where they are very vulnerable. They've either lost their job, or they're in a job where they're not happy, or they're being abused, or they're underpaid, or, well, you probably know every scenario there is out there. But at that point, you know, emotionally, they're very vulnerable, and they're looking for very special leadership, and not just a temporary relationship where you make an introduction and they move from one place of employment to another and now they're making money, thank you very much, Ken Payne, and then on they go. You're talking about providing people a lesson, a coaching lesson that will help them throughout the rest of their lives. That seems like a lot more value added than a normal headhunter.
That's very well expressed, Whitney, for you said they're vulnerable. You can access the individual. You get past the social mask. When a person is vulnerable, when they're hurt, they start asking questions that open up gates. And when those gates open, I find myself being them. Just for a moment, the empathy. They trust it, and it is a guiding sensation that they have, and they trust that, oh, well, this guy's not just trying to make a dollar off of me. He's really trying to basically bring out my best. But when you look at a person's resume, you'll see that there are patterns, and you go, so I developed a software, it's a mirror effect software, and it allows them to really look at what are they creating. Why do they fall into the same traps of trying to fit in instead of just being themselves? And they have these cognitions in this software. The cognitions are designed to really peel the onion back to their basic nature of integrity.
Mm.
I speak from experience. I have broken my integrity. That's why I said I learned that valuable lesson when I was down there in Madisonville. I broke my integrity to fit in.
When you talk about this onion, are there an infinite number of layers to this onion, or is there a structure to it?
Well, I speak of the onion as there are layers to all relationships. You have your professional rules. There are certain things that we shouldn't talk about. That's not business. Well, I understand those things, but I don't believe that you're really going to get a deep connect through the veneer of these layers. People get into these walks of life, and they lose their authenticity, and they don't flow. And that's a big word for me. They don't flow authenticity. They're hiding behind this barrier, and it's a safeguard. And to truly let the life energy, the spiritual, divine life energy, out, it is to be able to operate above another person's consideration. Yes, you have to be appropriate, and you have to have manners. These are the rules we all agreed to in order to play the game and to make the other people feel comfortable. But it seems it goes to the extreme. And, you know, the social mask is, we live this, and we lose our divinity in the process of trying to collect a paycheck, and our integrity goes out the door, and we go into what's called groupthink. What would they think if I said this?
It's worrying about how you appear to others while you're going through your daily life. Ken, if I could ask you to stay a little, you were close to the phone and then you moved a little bit away from it and it changed the sound levels a little bit. So it was sounding good and now you're sounding a little faint. So if you'll just adjust that, that'll be great. Well, listen, you talk about flow. Is this a life energy flow? Is this the dynamism of that person?
Now, understand, I'm going to speak on very basic, very simple, very true levels. I'm all about the level of truth. What are we? We're a composite being. We're human beings. We're programmed to think that we're bodies.
Yes, we are.
Programmed to think linear. It's an unspoken rule. The way I talk right now, if I were to go into a business setting, 20% of the people would probably poo-poo what I say because it's an unspoken rule. You shouldn't talk about psychic abilities. You shouldn't talk about the upper self or the inner self.
that's the body. And there seems to be a lot of fear in this arena, this conversation with lots of people. They don't. I don't want to talk about that. Well, that's a layer that I will try to. It's a pretense, is what it is. Beings pretend. We're really good at it. We're creatures of mimicry, and we'll do as our parents say, and we're programmed to think certain ways to fit in. It's not the authentic self. That's just another layer. Behind that is the mind. And the mind integrates the heart, the seat of emotion, with the body. You know, there's a flow between the heart, the seat of emotion, with the mind and the body. And then you have the soul. It's so close to the heart, the seat of emotion. And every being has a soul. The soul is a recording studio, so to speak. It is where we collect our most subtle love recordings. We may not be able to go and transition lifetime after lifetime after lifetime with full recall, but the more loving that glue on, I mean, that it's a glue. It's a magnet. You know, the more you love, the more you will recall, and you can take that with you lifetime after lifetime. That's the essence that you take. You don't need to know math. You don't need to know a whole lot of things. You pick it up so easy. But we're composite beings. We are the being with the soul, the heart, the seat of emotion, the mind, and the body. And so many people are socially programmed to act like bodies.
Yes, we are.
And it's flat, somewhat cold, three-dimensional, and the way we speak right now, Brooke, my intention is to popularize, to make what I say and other folks who have an enjoyment of this type of conversation, to make what we talk about the truth in fashion, in vogue, instead of the other way around. Then I believe that we'll have a planet that we can be proud of.
So, this, the scope of what we're talking about has gotten from the individual now to something that has planetary reaches and probably universal reaches. Let's see if we can go back to the very, very beginning. Let's say, let's go back to the concept of the original void, where there is nothing. I think at one time, one of our conversations, you called it N. Maybe you can bring us up to date on up to speed on what that concept is, and maybe perhaps what the origin of this soul might be.
That's a fascinating concept. And do remember, these are concepts. Everyone is rooted to truth. It takes truth to know.
Right.
Okay, so when I say the truth, I am talking about is. We're all rooted to the truth from which we tap our ability to know. For instance, and this is just a little pretend game, watch this. If I told you that existence was, we're all riding on the back of a pink hippopotamus, well, you know that's not true. But the being, the human being, knows what is true. I'm not going to be able to express anything to you, Brooks, or anyone else that they don't already know. They already know we're not, you know, that existence is nothing so fanciful. But if I say we feel like we're in a physical universe. Okay?
Right.
But if I say that we're all rooted in the same source point, and we're all one, but the illusion, or the dimension, even better word, the dimension of time and space, okay, gives us the feeling of being alone or being separate.
Yes, yes. Now, we do feel like individuals.
Okay. But we're all rooted in the same source. Now,
that source where we truly emanate from is infinite. Now, the being knows that's true. They resonate with it. It's not like me saying, oh, well, existences were all right on the back of the naked. That's not true. So the being knows. How do they know? Well, because we're all rooted to the same point of the pure truth. It takes truth to know. Okay, so if we're all emanating from the same, I say point, but it's not even a point because that sounds linear. We just, I use that word. Then we are one.
How did we divide then? How did we, why do we feel individual?
Well, I'm a games philosopher. I have to hold off on that. Let me explain where I was at.
Okay.
Okay. If you realize it takes space in order to communicate. Okay, now, Lynn, look at that.
Okay.
Okay, that means that where we truly emanate from, there is really no need to communicate. Because we know. We don't know specifics, but we do know. Now, look at the ocean, or look at any body of water. And the sun has shines on it. Okay, you see all those diamonds, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but each diamond is still one of the ocean, right?
Right.
Okay. But each diamond is too close to the other diamond to see the other diamond.
So we don't see a difference between each other when we're in that state.
Correct, which brings us right into the concept of desire.
Desire, yes.
Yes, desire is the urge.
According to Harold Percival, that's the one force that separates, that creates man, really. That desire is a sense that creates the individual.
Yeah. If you want to do a really good model of this, and realize this is just a metaphor of what is, and I've just explained what is, now I've fabricated the is. I mean, when I say is, I'm talking about it always has been, always will be, it just is. And then you start to realize how temporal or how temporary life is. And then you start going, wow, it's kind of like a movie. And if I always have been and always will be, then life could be like a blink in the eye to God. Then you start to understand above time, above space concepts, where we truly emanate from. Above the linear flow, above the world of motion, above the physical universe, where we truly emanate from. And why would we create a canvas to play in? Well, it's because we're too close to each other to express our uniqueness.
So we create a game.
It is a bit of a, I'd say a venue is a better word.
Okay, we create a venue.
Like Shakespeare, life is a stage. We're all actors. You know, Shakespeare has a lot on this subject. But you have to be really looking at the subtleties. You have to have the light mind in order to be, you have to be searching for it in the first place, or it'll just go, it's too simple, it's too true. Truth and simplicity. Simple and true is about the same thing. It's too simple. It'll elude you. I mean, it's too simple. Too subtle. Alright, and that's why it's difficult to use words. This is more of an experience. You have to be searching for this, and there's various paths of enlightenment to experience this infinite concept. But you want to, we go back to some of the ancients, and you look at some of the ancients, and they'll, where do you think the alphabet came from?
I know the historical records of where the alphabet came from, and back to the Sumerian texts, but, why did it become necessary to communicate with symbols at all?
Correct, because they're blueprints. Like, they would chop off your hands if you knew how to turn the pages of a book and you knew
some of these ancient mystical symbols of the pharaohs and the hieroglyphs. That's religion. I mean, that's sacred stuff, you know, where we get the word secret. It's like, you know, those in power knew this information. And simply, I'm just going through a nice little recall. The being already knows what I'm about ready to say, because I'm going to tell you, you must already know that symbolism is so important. I mean, if you really boil it down, look at the alphabet. There's a lot of secrets in the alphabet. Look in the center of the alphabet. There's the word, there's the letter N.
You're
getting into alpha. What does that mean? What it means always has been. What do you mean? Omega means problem. There's lots of information in there for those who seek it. But this concept of nothing is right in the center. And those who have really been searching for the ancient knowledge will find it in the alphabet. They'll also find it in math, the universal language.
So let's assume that we're at N now. We're going to, as humans, we like to think of things in logical order sometimes.
Sure.
Start with N and work us forward.
All right. Let's just go ahead and say that as on heaven as there is on earth. That's a, you know, everything that you want to know is right here. Just look and you'll see. Let's look at, go to sleep tonight. When you go to sleep tonight, there will be no time. There will be no space. And anything you can fathom will manifest in a form, whether you remember it or not. But you won't have any concept of time and space. You don't know the difference between a second or 8 hours. That's our basic nature. That is our basic nature. That's where we bring forth a universe. We bring forth this universe. Here's a good note. Let's take this concept of the sea, these diamonds sparkling in the sun, okay? But they're all one, okay? Let's go to this concept of the truth, the is, from which we all emanate from which we have to have any knowing.
Okay.
Okay. If you want a good mock-up of this, just go ahead and say, let's take that concept of the ocean, let's turn it into a ball, an orb, a spherical, never-ending, non-linear, okay? And let's say that we, certain creator class beings, and it doesn't matter whether you perceive yourself one as not, or one that is, or is not, it doesn't really matter, because without time and space, and we're all rooted to infinity, anything's possible, then you can wake up right now, as you are rooted to the same place as I am, the potential of all potentialities, where I say, let there be light. There it is. There's light. Okay, well, that was great, and that was fast, and that was too, you know, like a dream. You could do that in a dream. You could have anything you want, and that's what we are the essence of. We are pure create. That's what we really are. We are pure create. Let's take this ball, let's take this orb, and let's say that's true. But we know too much.
Yeah, we have all knowledge because we're in this end and we can't see anything. There's no distance between anybody. There's no reference point. We don't know if we're spinning, if we're going up and down. We don't have a concept of distance. And frankly, it sounds pretty boring.
Exactly. It is boring. And I think it was the Veda was talking about the male god concept. Bored. Always has been, always will be. And then he creates the concept of female. And the female cuts him up into thousands of pieces and casts him off into Nowheresville or the Oblivion, and now he's out there playing hide-and-seek. That's a pretty nice place to start with this concept because it's pretty ancient. So let's look at, let's don't personify God as a man. Let's just say it's us. And let's just say it's us. Always has been, always will be. And it's boring. Because we know there's no challenge, there's no sensation. We just met. There's no time. We always will be. And you know what? What could God possibly do? What would be a challenge? Well, he could destroy himself. That would be the only challenge to an omnipotent.
Well, assuming that's impossible, what's the next option?
It would be impossible. Did next option is to basically make less of our infinite, our divinity.
Well, we have to do that on purpose, right? We have
that's a decision. It's a decision. It's an illusion. Here's the secret. The secret is death is a lie.
How do you do that?
It is create you. All right, for instance, if we realize how, when I say the potential of all potentiality, that's what we are. But people have made so less of their abilities, they can't fathom that, but there's an inner aspect of self that says, I know somewhere deeply that must be true because I've never really met my full potential. I mean, let's look at Martin Luther King, who had lots of things stacked up against him, right?
Yeah.
But look what he pulled off. Well, this guy probably met about 10% of his potential. Right? When I say deeply, we know that we're more than what we're being or how we're behaving. We know that. Okay, when I say let's go back to this concept of the beginning, well, there's really no beginning. It's an illusion to me. It's like going to sleep. Okay, so in order to, I want to go back to this concept of death. That, you know, you create the concept of death as it's an illusion. It is an illusion. People have a hard time thinking that death is an illusion because they still think they're bodies. They still think linear. That's a really big secret, all right? So how did we go from in to nothing? What I mean, that death is a thing. We're not stuff, okay? We're always has been, always will be.
All right, how did we go from in with no sensation, knowing everything, how did we go from that to self-realization?
Well, we basically disintegrated. And a good way of explaining that on a physics concept is you look at the this Big Bang concept. If you know and you have to implode, imagine us imploding. And simultaneously, that implosion will create simultaneously an explosion of life energy particle resonance. That sounds like that would create a physical universe. If you took truth, the infinite, let's call it God, and we take this, and we take this orb, and we implode it. We contract it down from truth down to knowing down to emotion down to receiving down to thinking down to figuring down to solids down to really kind of slow now. Really kind of slow. Because in your dream state, if you want a Snickers candy bar, it's there, but it's like a form. It's a spiritual form. It's gone. It's vanished. It's nothing. You can't hold it in space. Well, if you think about this, if you start to be, and I'm not going to try to convince anyone that this is how it happens. These are just, we're discovering. But in the alphabet, you could say it started in nothing, and then simultaneously implode. That means you're going to go down to M, which means mutate.
Okay.
Nothing has a mutation. M is new to move. All right, there's a mutation. Okay. Even to do that, we have to have this illusion of death. You know, you always have been, you always will be, then let's, you know, mock up, let's create, because we can do anything we want to at this state. And
so
pretend, it's a pretend, let's pretend we're going to die, okay, let's pretend that we mutate. Simultaneously, we have this this P and this pi. Well, we say pi is beauty, from truth down to beauty. You know, from truth to beauty is a hell of a fall, but it's better than nothing. Now, this is where you get into aesthetics, the fifth branch of philosophy. This is where you get music, the silent notes of infinity, my soul, my feelings. It is a mutation from nothing to something. But we have a bit of a split. That's where we go into the male side, the female side concept. Let's say if we're going into pi, that's on the right side of the alphabet, we're going to get light, okay? If we go down to mutate, we're going to get sound. Let's keep going further. Let's degrade ourselves down. Okay? What's after P?
back up here. N-O. Don't forget omega, because, you know, if you understand problems, you know, beings love puzzles, love problems.
Yeah, we don't like everything to be solved all the time. We get kind of bored. We like a challenge. We are beings that like to explore, that like to solve things, that like to overcome things.
Yeah. In order to go from knowing, all knowing, one must have the illusion of death. That's a mutation that creates a problem. I just gave you N and M and O right there. It's coming out. Then you're going to have pi. Okay. L, which is on the female side, is going to be this concept of love and lamba, the lamb, the sacrifice. There's a sense of mercy with this. It's a very heartfelt. It gives us mercy. Keep going on the female side, you'll eventually degrade down to what's called justice. This is where you start getting into war, things of this nature. It's a darker side. But see, you know, this is still above good and evil. Way above good and evil. Good and evil is a person who's motivated by fear. This is still a creation concept. All right, so let's go to P. Okay, now we have a nice pi, which is, you know, any good scientist will tell you, any good metaphysician will tell you, any good philosopher will tell you, pi is just a beauty. It does set up a dwindling spiral, though. We'll go with truth down to beauty. It's eon. Let's go to Q. Our quest. I'm in a lot of quests tonight, if I simply just tell you the secret that death is an illusion. Then you know you'll be immortal. And then you know you'll operate authentically. And then you'll have integrity. And you won't do certain things for solids. When I say solids, I mean temporal plane stuff, you know.
So if death is an illusion, then mortality is an illusion as well.
Indeed, it is.
And the illusion that we play ourselves through for this microsecond, whether it's 100 years or 1 year, it's still a microsecond in space and time.
Yeah, to a being, it's nothing.
This is what gives us interest or dimension or depth, or do we develop?
Oh, we evolve, yeah.
We evolve.
That's beautiful. I think we're evolving towards, let's look at, if you keep going down the alphabet and kind of bore you with it, but, you know, wanted to actually kind of hit on those creation concepts. We evolve our soul in a hologram of cause and effect. Whatever you outflow, you're going to inflow.
And we are all co-creators in the hologram?
It's beautiful. Color. The simple things become... But this, at this, this level of truth, keep silent your mind.
So the importance for a mortal being who may just now be getting glimpses of his eternal nature. When we're kids, we think we're eternal because nothing can harm us. We get sick, we fall down, we heal, we're good as new. We can run forever and play forever, and we are ever learning. But as we get a little older,
We fall into the social programming, and next thing you know, since we have all agreed that we're bodies, or at least 80%, there's a certain amount of us that seems to be the dream of the planet, the constant social programming. What we've done is we've, here in this last 50 years, the conversation we're having right now is becoming in vogue. It's fashionable. It's like, I mean, to me, it's kind of common sense. But I'll say 50 years from now, we should be able to look back and go, oh, can you imagine the day when people actually thought linear, that they were really dying?
Yeah.
But I've been doing it for a long time, so, you know, I was talking to my daughter, Gloria, and I said, you know, can you imagine? I'll get on X Word Radio and actually say what I just said, and people would actually poo-poo that, you know?
Well, not on this program. We have some pretty eclectic listeners. What happens is, from what I gather from all of this and from my observations of life, when we're a teenager, we think we're going to live forever, and then when we reach the age where we, as you say, fall into the patterns of life, then we realize we have existed forever and we will exist forever. And that changes the challenge of mortality as well.
Mortality is an illusion. As well as I say, this is Metaphysics 101. We're taking back where we were at in the dream state. And we realize what heaven is or is a matter. When you go to sleep tonight, you're going to experience this basic nature. There's no time, there's no space. You make mock-ups, there's stories, and then the alarm clock rings, and the brain is awake again, and you get this linear frame, and it's temporary.
Well, it's temporary, but for us, and maybe rightly so, it feels so important. It feels so valuable. It feels so real. So we've been successful.
Valuable. It is valuable. No, it's not quite. It's so valuable. These physical universes that we create, they're very valuable. They're canvases. We go back to that concept of desire. I mean, God, the magnificence, what a great word that is. The magnificence of the being. I mean, we have so much to share. I mean, we have so much love. We have so much color. And with our physical universe as a canvas, you know, it's like, how are we going to emanate and receive back what we're emanating? It's such a beautiful mock-up that we've got here. I mean, you know, physical universe is, you know, this is the first one we've gone through. If you start thinking about time and space concept, think of the physical universe like God's heartbeat. It'll go out. It goes back in. Or think of it like a pendulum, even better. We'll know too much to play, so we get dark and we contract and regrade down into what I call knowledge. It's not knowing, but it's certainly knowledge where things get really solid. We want a lot of attention. And it's going to get a little grotesque. We lose our grace. And, you know, slavery and war and things of this nature. And we get tired of it and we go, you know, we go to another eon and we start talking more the way we're talking now. And eventually we'll get to the point where things get light, very easy. And the pendulum will swing, oh, that's boring. And these are pendulum effects. You know, we go from, 26,000 years over here, it's kind of grotesque and dark and solid and cool. And get tired of that, okay, a couple of avatars come around or whatever they, you know, other these beings. And these are cycles. We go on for eons. When you wake up to what you really are, there's really nothing to get hung about. And then you really start flowing from authentic self and the love, the heart that opens, and integrity. What else is there?
Well, that's it. And hopefully we find out somewhere in the beginning or middle point of our mortal lives that we can flow and that we do have this life energy that is so important. We don't find out at the end of our lives when we really can't do anything about it in this mortality, because perhaps it's important to realize the value in yourself, the creative ability in yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And even more importantly, maybe the relationship between ourselves and other people. It's not meant, I guess, to be a life of solitude in mortality. We are meant to interact with one another. We're meant to work for one another, marry one another, have children with one another. And that's this intermingling with one intelligence and another intelligence is what develops us, what really gives us interest. And by interest, I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're immensely happy with that person or even immensely upset with that person. Both experiences are valuable for the soul.
You got it. And it's so well expressed. It's in this state of this state. Everyone has equally capable of the state we're talking about. This is not a special thing. This is not, it takes some work. It's done on purpose. And certainly it's a focus of attention, because whatever you put your attention on grows. If you put your attention on this subject, it will grow. And if it's just a nice little piece of popcorn conversation, then, you know, it's kind of too skeptical. You know, the skeptics go, they're just too far out there. Well, good. They won't put their attention on it. It won't grow. The life, the 80-year, the 100-year life, it is designed to evolve the soul to what you just said, the intermingling. To the enlightened mind, and you know, I'm an amateur. You may think I'm, you know, there's people, and there are people I look up to, like, wow, I so admire these people. But in any event, what I'm saying is that to the enlightened mind, that embraces diversity. It embraces diversity. It is the commingling. Imagine an ocean of love. And you're so unique, Brooks, and I'm so unique, Ken, and Michelle, she's so unique, and Jim and Gloria, and you know, wow, how simple the notion of love where you commingle and you learn from so many things, and you know, just, it's so simple. And people get bogged down into making things so serious, and they got to worry, and they got to take medicine, and you know, what would the neighbors think, and and all that kind of stuff. It's
how
infinite you are. You realize, you know, start to flow, and what you flow mostly is love.
Well, let's see if we can get into that a little more in the next hour. We will cover concepts like intention, attention, love, this flow, and the energy that's inside each of us. My guest tonight is Ken Payne. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio, and we'll be back. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. There is something about to happen to the Earth. You know it. You can feel it. Well, the creators of the Kill Shot have collected the evidence for you in a stunning new documentary called The Horizon Project. The first DVD is now in print, and you can get it by clicking on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio. Believe me when I tell you, this may be the most important video production you will ever see. This is destined to air on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, but you need the uncut version. Click the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get your copy today. Many people write us here at X Squared Radio wanting to know how to get prepared for the coming cataclysms. Well, we have been successful in acquiring the best affiliate in the world for emergency preparedness. NitroPak has been around for 18 years and can provide everything you need for life. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a year's supply of excellent quality foods
supplements for a single person or a whole family. Don't be left without the essentials of life. NitroPack is the name. Click the banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in the series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. Statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. And welcome back, my friends, to X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew, where the past meets the future. And here the results are always positive. My guest tonight is the indomitable Ken Payne. That's spelled P-A-Y-N-E. Don't try to Google him. Just go look for searchforjob.com. That's his website. Is it search for job or search for jobs?
It's singular.
Singular. Okay. Listen, we are on for 3 full hours. So if your radio station is only carrying 1 hour, you need to send us the call letters of that radio station, and we'll do the rest. Those of you that want to call in, and I have a friend out there who is IMing. I'm trying to encourage him to call in. He's afraid he has to be cleared before he calls in, but we're laughing about that here in the studio. The phone number is toll-free, 877-876-5227, anywhere inside the United States. In Canada, 888-810-8322, and anywhere else on planet, off planet, or inside the planet. If you can reach a tower, you can reach us at 530-876-3222. The last hour, we laid a good foundation for talking about the great void, the end, the nothing, where the soul was bored and needing some kind of excitement, some kind of purpose, some kind of ability to learn, to grow, to stimulate one another, to bond with one another. And that brings us to this hour where we are going to talk about the concepts of intention and attention and the things that get the flow of the life force of a human, of an individual intelligence going. And I can think of no better person on earth to bring those concepts to us than Ken Payne. Welcome back.
Thank you, Brooks. I was looking at your word, indomitable. I had to crack open the dictionary. You know me fairly well with dictionaries. that cannot be subdued, unyielding, stubbornly persistent. And I agree.
All right. Well, it was a good choice of words. Indomitable, and we will yet use many other
unyielding
words that require dictionaries here on X Squared Radio. So let's talk about, I have heard in my recent training in the last 5 months, these two words, and I've heard them bantied about, I've heard them defined different ways, but I really haven't heard them applied well unless I'm talking with you, and we've had, gosh, several hundred hours of conversations on this. The two words are attention and intention.
Yeah. Attention. It's powerful. It's got a lot of explosion in it. I was reading, kind of refreshing back on the word attention. Let's go baseline in, that nothing, that void, no thing, which we are. We are nothing with potential. And it's that to truly wake up to life, there is a death of our infinite potentialities. Let's go into intention, and then it's kind of funner that way. If we talk about intention, then we'll understand attention. Imagine a time where we were more godlike, very boring. In the dream state, you know, you can have your Snickers bar, you can just, you know, you can do anything you want to in that dream state. That's our basic nature. All right, so imagine the time the physical universe is anew. This particular physical universe is anew. And you see something, you view it in dimension, and it's a planet, and you have this thing called will. Thy will be done. So it made you sad, or it made you angry, or whatever this object that came into your space was, and by will, it vaporized. It depends on your emotion of it. It wasn't yours. It wasn't. You didn't create it. And what's that doing in my space? It might perturb you. And then, pow. So let's create this concept, and that's what beings do. They create. You can imagine potential of all potentialities, you know, infinity. Then it's not that hard to grasp that you actually have to create an intention as a buffer between your will and a manifestation.
Well, that's a powerful word. Now you go from attention to manifestation.
Which means to make visible.
It means to make visible, right. So
right.
So this is a conscious expenditure of energy by the entity, him or herself,
mm-hmm.
once this attention is acquired.
Yeah, we'll have to get down into the more complex concepts like intention before we even go to the basic of attention.
Okay.
Now, let's go into intention. Imagine intention actually allows a buffering of your will before it manifests. Because remember, always has been, always will be, kind of like the dream state, no time, no space, then get what you want too fast. It's kind of boring. So let's put some intention between our will and our manifestation. So it could be said that intention in itself slows things down at the upper God-like states.
Yeah, it's not like being a god and snapping your fingers and having, you know, the table set to the extent that you could gorge yourself or you couldn't put another crouton in your mouth. Where's the challenge in that?
Yeah.
So you need intention to sort of pre-create things.
You got it. So intent is it's so basic to the being. It's how we manifest. But first we have to have will before we manifest. Will is so close to create. We do it all the time, it's just that we're down in the solids and we've degraded ourselves to the point. These days, we hear about the power of intention and, well, it's got effort on it and, you know, we're down in the solids and there's a lot of effort and next thing you know,
If I could just muster up the intention, I might be able to get it done. Well, that's a pretty fall. That's a pretty good fall from going from using intention to create time.
Now, well, you know, I hear people all the time, intention, you know, the road to failure is paved with good intentions and all of this silly things that are meant to make us give up before we even start. And there's another saying that kind of goes along with this. The powers that be. You know, if the powers that be want it to happen while it'll
happen.
There
are no powers that be.
Yeah. If I
external.
Think about it long enough, I'm sure I'm going to get my lottery winnings in the mail.
Yeah, that's not full responsibility.
Right.
The path to happiness is full responsibility.
So there's got to be something added to, after. Well, first of all, you have to have the intention. Without the intention, absolutely nothing is going to happen.
Without the will. So you could say attention, then will, then intention,
right.
Then manifestation. So look at it in terms of sequence. First, attention must be there.
A recognition.
Yeah, attention is number one. So whatever you put your attention on will grow. In other words, attention is the conduit of the being so that he can channel his will intention for the manifestation. So, in essence, the first basic of a being is attention. It's like wake up, be there.
So whatever you focus on,
mm-hmm,
is what you're going to eventually manifest. Sort of,
yeah,
like
putting, it's like. If we like solids a lot, this is going to get pretty good. We like solids a lot. We're really clingy. The mind loves cling because of fear. We love to cling to stuff. We won't let go. And we won't go let go of the, and again, I'll use this word illusion, of the temporal plane. It's fleeting. But we just won't let go of it. Then we beget like it. Like it begets like. Now,
well,
I'm taking you from creation concepts, the basics, and I'm stretching you far out towards concepts of solids. I don't even want to get into the solids level. Let's stay up into the creation concepts of what a being is. Being is truth.
Okay.
Being is truth. Now, there are levels of truth to the elasticity of how much one lies about. And here's the great secret. The great secret is death. Well, you have to pretend that you can die. Well, that's a pretty big lie. Now, there's elasticity between you and truth based on how much you really believe that lie, that you will die. Now, the more you believe that, then the more you'll cling to solids. And you won't let go. And you'll misprioritize what this plane is really here for.
So it's all about, at that point, is about the risk of the intention. Am I going to risk my mortality? Am I going to risk my home? Am I going to risk my bank accounts? Am I going to risk my reputation by making an intention on something I have my attention on?
Slow that down. I almost had that one.
Well, you were mentioning that death was the great lie. Obviously, the truth is we cannot die. We are eternal beings. We might change physical states. We might even change from a male to a female, from life to life, depending on our choice. But die is not a concept that an eternal being can understand. So we must lie to ourselves.
Correct.
And if the lie is good enough, then we say, according to you, we cling to the solids. We cling to the things of life instead of the concepts of life.
Correct. We are nothing. We are no thing. We are no thing. And since we are kind of sticky about things, so we can express our uniqueness, we cling to it.
By sticky, you mean we hold on to
sticky,
the things.
Meaning
we sort
sticky.
Of camp.
Yeah, right, correct. This is pretty high Gnostic concepts. This is really not the best path. It's a good way to explain some upper gradient truths. But it's on the extreme. We have a world of motion. It is to be desired as long as it's prioritized in the middle. In the, you know, it has to be sensible. There's nothing wrong with abundance. Just realize what it is. It's nothing but solid. I mean, you come across some of these paths that really just bliss you all the way out there on the doctor. Way too far out talking about things like this, and they're not responsible, and they shun the material plane. Now, we should revel and play in it and have it and create abundance and trade, and there's nothing wrong with solids. Just realize that that's what they are. They're solid.
Right, right. Well, I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Robert Troop, and I'm from Michigan.
All right, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Welcome
to
the program.
How you doing, Brooks?
I'm doing fantastic. Do you have a question for us?
No, I was just listening in and was rather amazed at the grasp that that we've got going and the levels that we're at. And to commend both of you.
Well, we both appreciate you. we're out there on the very fringe of creation itself. And we're about to get into some, well, we are in some deep concepts. I was going to say we're in some deep other things, but so what fascinates you about it?
I've known Ken for a little while and have been quite involved in it from the application standpoint, from getting enlightened and cleared to getting a really good view of the solids and extracting myself out of it, getting myself back up where I need to be into the conceptual universe.
And that has brought you satisfaction and happiness?
Oh, tremendous. Throughout my life, it's impacted everybody that I come in touch with. The act of presence and the application of presence.
Well, tell us a little bit about presence. What does that mean to you?
Well, with when you become open to the concepts and you start grasping that there is and that there is no, and then there's knowing. When you know something, you know it. There's different applications. You'll walk into a situation or something will happen or a concept will come to you that you automatically from the depths of your soul, you know what is going on and what the answer is.
So you transcend faith and now you know.
Yes. Yes. You have to get, when you transcend beyond think or what we refer to as knowing. Knowing is the dropping down a level from the metaphysical. You start heading towards the physical, back towards the solids again, and you are in search because you're doubting. And all of this, as you run through it and you start looking back, once you become open and enlightened and start looking back at it, you find out that people like to, in our inherent nature, as Deming likes to put it, we like to operate in a group. And you have people who like to operate off of what they feel is control because of insecurity. So they try to drag you into their game sphere and into their solids and tell you, oh, gee, you're wrong. Okay, you're not correct. Right, the concept of right, wrong, correct, incorrect is based on you. Okay, and what you determine it to be, not what somebody else determines it to be. And
so
if you allow them to determine that for you.
So the goal here is to not fall into groupthink, to remain sovereign?
Yes. Sovereignty onto oneself and stay out of the game spheres, stay out of the groupthink, and be at your unity with the universe and to is, where you came from, where your soul from, where your soul operates. That's the life.
Wow, Ken. Sounds like we have another host here. We need to keep Robert on the line a little bit. What does Ken think?
I think you're spot on with it. Let's look at groupthink, authenticity, integrity, and leadership. If one is pretending that they're a body, and they're really scared, and they're clinging to solids. They're more apt to do the herding instinct. What would they think if I did the right thing? I might lose my job. The person's degraded down to the point where they're motivated by fear. They're not being authentic.
I think I've seen people like that. They come to the plant in the morning, maybe 5 or 10 minutes early. They sit in their car listening to the radio or smoking a cigarette, just trying to get up the will, the courage, to go inside and face another day at a job they hate, in a place they hate being, with people they hate working with, because they're caught up in that reality.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's put on the old social mask and go through the motions, and I know that I have to do this for a paycheck. And what's life about? Do I really want to sell out my divinity for the solids? Well, yeah, they do, because they're scared. What are they scared of? Well, they haven't realized the secret. The secret is there is no death. That's fear. They're motivated by fear. So, think about that. How many times have you seen a person like George Washington or Teddy Roosevelt or Gandhi? Or, you know, they're not motivated by fear. They're motivated by truth. And it's really hard to trap a being who has that much integrity.
Well, Robert, what happened to you when you realized, when you started to, you said you went through clearing, that you cleared the fear off of you? What happened to you?
Well, it was more than just fear. On a daily basis, if you start looking into it, everybody's life is ruled. The people who run around in solid and levels of solids is ruled by fear. Fear of lack of success, fear of somebody else's impression, things of that nature. And when I first got involved in all this, I had been successful. I had tried to meet other people's requirements, and I got slapped down hard. And it felt like I actually had grease all over my soul, is the best way to describe it. Went through the clearing, got my eyes opened within about the first 2 hours, and had been talking with Ken and working with Ken a little bit. And after that, my whole world opened up for me. I was able to walk into, as an example, after coming out of clearing, I pulled into a McDonald's, and the guy that was in front of me, the young lady, was very curt, mean, nasty. He was very professional when he placed his order. When I came up there, just I exercised presence, and when I did, she was glowing. She started smiling. She was very open, and you have your whole life changes. It's I went through 21 years in the Navy, marriage, kids, still married to the same wonderful woman after 26 years, and nothing held to the same level as what this did. My dreams become lucid. My contact with world and with the world of solids and the world of the metaphysical and space, time, and the universe itself entirely changed.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. I'm going to save that recording. I'm going to transpose it to text, and I'm going to stick it behind a magnet on my refrigerator. That was so profound. Now, there are a couple things that the audience, the listeners, might not be familiar with. One is the concept of clearing. We're going to cover that in depth our last hour, but since I have you on the phone right now, in, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, can you sort of give us a testimony of what clearing is?
Certainly. Basically, every entity has a soul or an energy, whichever term you like to use. And over the years of your programming, as you grow up, you develop scars. These scars are triggered by either acts or feelings or verbiage. And in the act of clearing, you go in, and as in any scar, it has to be opened back up. It has to be brought to the surface. It has to be addressed and dealt with. And you have to learn to be able to forgive yourself and others and bring this thing up and remove it and allow it to start to heal. And in the process of clearing, you also get enlightened as to cause and effect as these come to the surface. What is the true cause and effect behind it, and what was the impact that holds for you then and all the way to now? Simple little things like a harsh word from an aunt when you're a small child. A boss with a nasty look, or you didn't achieve a goal. So that when you go to clearing and you open this up, and the clearing practitioner does not give you answers, okay? They enable you to find your own answers. They act as a guide for you. And it's truly a moving experience. It affects the physical and the metaphysical. I went through it, the world glasses my whole life come out, and didn't need my glasses anymore. After 21 years in the Navy, never slept more than 4 hours. Came out of there. The first night I slept 16 hours.
Wow.
Came home. My wife, her first comment was after she picked me up at the airport, we drove for 5 hours, or for 5 minutes. She made me pull over and asked me where in the hell her husband was at. she couldn't believe it. She just absolutely could not believe it.
Wow. So this process of clearing, now you utilized or were facilitated by a clearing practitioner. Who is that?
Mine was I was given the gift of working with Enid Vienne.
I see.
And now it's expanded a little bit farther over to the East Coast. I got the opportunity the other day to work with Michael, who works with Ken.
Uh-huh.
And his techniques are just as excellent.
Wow. So in getting in touch with these, let's just call them soul wounds, things that have hurt you or created some kind of mirror or resonator inside of you that subconsciously or consciously creates the same reaction in you over and over again, which may or may not be self-destructive or destructive to others around you, clearing that off or resolving that issue, that energy, once and for all, allows whatever life force was dammed up behind that mirror or that wall to flow. And now you're able to make use of it in your life, and it really changed you.
Yes, it did. Absolutely. You hit it right on the head.
Wow, that is amazing. So did this change your employment life?
Oh, yeah. tremendous. Tremendous. The individuals, or the dynamic individuals I deal with, love confrontation, love game spheres. And I am in the realm of quality, so I'm always dealing with everybody pretty much in all facets. And now what used to aggravate me or upset me or allow me to get drawn into their game sphere, and then I would have to confront repeatedly and continuously, now I approach it from a different aspect entirely, and they don't know how to deal with that. So from their aspect, I automatically win.
Uh-huh.
From my aspect, it's not a win or lose. It's an accomplishment of enlightenment and understanding.
So what does it feel like to you when you're pushed by a physical being and the hands or the emotions of the pusher go right through you as though they're not real?
The best way I can describe it, and Ken's going to giggle over this one, is milk on a glass tabletop. Picture yourself standing underneath the glass tabletop, and you have a president or a CEO standing there pouring rotten sour milk on top of the tabletop, and you're kind of looking up at him, and he can't see you. or she can't see you because they're in the process of trying to break you down, break you up, make you kowtow or condescend to them. And you look at this, and once it flows by, you come out with the truth, the absolute truth, which is the world that we deal in, that, or the world that we're supposed to deal in and should be dealing in, and you just can't deny absolute truth. And they have the tendency to open their eyes and go, my God, he's got the focus, he's got his hands on the prize, and they go from being your greatest enemy to your staunchest ally.
How about that? Well, as if that couldn't make a difference in every single person's life who is listening to this program tonight, if you feel like Robert's words are resonating with you, if you have ever had a CEO try to pour sour milk on you, and I think that's a great metaphor, instead of going home smelling like that, why not learn how to get cleared? Why not learn how to become satisfied with what one does as a profession, which really, after self and after family, is about what you do in this world. So, Ken, how do you feel about Robert's words?
I think what it is that when you get to a point above the solids, and you can really connect to another human being above their game, because really, most of these people are pretending that they're all about paychecks and their career motivations and their face. When a person starts to try to climb you, just go ahead and have no walls and let that go right through you, and don't think too much about what they're saying, and still stay connected. And like Robert said, they go, wow, this guy's got such poise. He understands. And you have an ally.
Everything is rapport.
It's a rapport.
Yeah, rapport. Tell me a little bit about rapport, both of you. What does rapport mean?
I know the formula of rapport means no secrets are withheld between two people. It's a clear medium. It's a fuller understanding, seeing the person as a being instead of his body and his mind and all the drama he's trying to, all the stories he's trying to tell you, and all these things he wants you to put your attention on that hook you into his story. Rapport means no secrets. It means no withholds. It means a lot. It doesn't involve a lot of drama. It's that silent connect between two other human beings, and it is a permeation. It is a pure understanding, and it's present. It's trust.
Wow, that's remarkable. I have worked with people in my profession as a contract troubleshooter, I guess you could call me, in manufacturing, using probably the same quality skills that Robert uses. I'm usually called in when everything is broken and on fire, and the contract's about to be lost and the plant's losing money. So when I go in, everybody's unhappy and they want to be made happy. And it takes a tremendous amount of inner will to go into an area that's really not conducive for human life and make it happy, make it productive, make it by presence, change it. And I heard that in Robert's voice, and it appears as though his lifelong mate of 26 years picks him up at the airport and in 5 minutes realizes it is not her husband sitting in the passenger seat, that he has had an awakening, an enlightenment. Something is different about him.
He's back to the basic nature, without all the drama in his head, all the soul wounds echoing and making his mind go, if I say this, she'll say that, if she says this, and all that. It goes away, and then you're capable of rapport.
Wow.
You're present without all the internal chatter.
Magnificent. Robert, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your phone call. I don't want to keep you on the phone all night. I'll let you continue to listen unless Unless you have another great point to make, as I don't see how you could follow up that, but that was magnificent. I appreciate the call.
The only other thing I have is that, this will probably blend in rather well with the conversation, is that rapport and the soul and coming from is not just a human thing. It flows throughout everything. Prime example, I've got a dog here that people can't understand how he can do so well hunting, and it is the rapport that I have with that dog and the time that we spend together. He thinks as I do, I think as he does, and it can be practiced by anybody at any time, and they can actually find it in their daily lives.
So true.
Spectacular.
So with that, gentlemen, I shall sign off. I hope you all have a great evening. I will continue to listen in as an avid fan.
Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you.
Have a good evening and a good productive week. So, Ken, we're talking a little bit about deep concepts, metaphysical concepts, the realization of the soul, the recognition from nothing to something, to perhaps blocking ourselves off from all knowing to a point of only interpreting our universe through the senses of a mortal body and whatever imagination we have. And that restriction creates interest and makes us stretch and grow. And this process can be, hopefully, rather painful, and by that, instructional and making us magnificent beings. And a concept came up, a word, we called sovereign. What does that mean?
Well, let me clarify the question. I'd like to be able to do that back to you. You said something about painful?
Well, I said hopefully lessons sometimes can contain pain, which is a great teacher. No pun intended.
Yes. Pain. Yes, a great teacher. I don't know anyone that looks forward to it every day. The being does not want pain. Pain happens whenever the being gets off the middle path. It's kind of like the path of magnificence. Aristotle would say, is, you know, magnificence is, you know, the virtue between the two extremes. Whenever a being experiences pain, it's because he's misprioritized.
Yeah, but I find in my own children, if I step in and I say, no, don't make that decision because it's going to cause you pain, and they listen, have they learned a lesson, or should I, and I do sometimes, step back and say, all right, here's my advice, but go ahead if you want, and they do, and they experience pain, either emotional or
yeah.
Physical.
I think it's part of life.
Sure.
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page.
Yeah, I don't mean that we seek after pain, but it is one of those unavoidable events that happen.
Common sense dictates, stay the hell away from it.
we have another caller.
The concept of sovereignty, right?
We have another caller on the line. Caller, can you tell us where you're calling from and what's your first name?
Oh, my name is Jeff, and I'm a little confused because I thought I was calling in to Brooks.
Yes, this is Brooks Agnew.
This is Brooks. Brooks is Jeff Bird in Winchester, Virginia.
Outstanding. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Winchester.
Well, I'm listening to you over the air here, but it's a totally different dialogue, which is why I was confused.
Oh, well, I don't know what the dialogue was about.
Well, it's Ken Payne. Now, you all were talking about some kind of pain, but it wasn't Ken Payne.
Oh, yeah, okay. Very good, Jeff.
Winchester.
Yeah.
Not too far from Murfreesboro.
I don't know. I don't know where that is.
So
what are y'all talking about? I'm just eager to get in the conversation. I can't believe the level of consciousness that you all are putting out here.
Well, you know, what we're talking about is that the being brings forth, along with other beings, the actual physical universe that we're experiencing. That it's not an external a deity that creates this, as though he's got some game in mind where he knows what's going to happen, or she knows what's going to happen before we know, that in essence that we are... Here's a good one for you. Imagine Moses going up, and he sees a burning bush, right? And he sees a spark. If you ever light up a bush on fire, that thing's going to spark all over the place. Imagine them sparks are just flying out of that bush. Now, that divinity, that spark, okay, that's you. That's Brooks. That's everyone that's listening and everyone who's not listening. We don't realize how divine we are, okay? Now, certain of these sparks have a tendency to turn into solids and get so far away from the truth of the actual core, the root of the bush, and you'd like to be able to say, well, you know, if I, you know, this physical universe was created by something external. We're trying to convey or express the highest level of understanding from the standpoint that if you really want to be happy, then you want to take full responsibility. And I'm not saying it's possible. I'm saying it's true. I'm saying we did this. Not he did this or she did this or this is happening to us. I'm saying that we did this.
So, Jeff, what do you think about the concept that we, in fact, are the creator class beings that are responsible for the universe with which we interact?
Well, I'm totally comfortable with it. I have a million questions about it. Not the least of which, how all of the individual aspects that we call Ken, Brooke, and Jeff, and everybody else makes up the collective, because I can sit here and think about, well, I'm responsible for creating the world, and I take that personal responsibility for my little world, but then when I start thinking about being a part of the gazillion universes, or however it is, you know, that we're all participating in, I start to get a little confused.
I understand that feeling. I went down that trek myself. You don't want to fall into what's called false responsibility. Imagine being... okay, so if you look at the physical universe like a canvas and you're an artist, you're responsible for what you're presently controlling, what you own. You don't own the entire physical universe. You're not responsible for it, but you do. You have etched out a piece of it, and you're going to emanate from that. And you're going to lead by example. You're going to inspire other individuals. It's simply a matter of waking up enough individuals to a tipping point, a critical mass, a 100-monkey theory, if you will, that if we quit playing victim and we have something on the external to blame, then we're probably not going to paint very many pretty pictures. But if we all kind of wake up that we're the artists, and we have evolved ourselves back to our basic nature, taking full responsibility, you'll get a group awareness, an awakening, which is, curiously enough, prophesized, and I don't want to get into prophecy, but I think we're in the pretty cool times, an awesome piece of space on this canvas where we get enough responsible artists. We're not going to have so many people going around being grotesque about the whole ordeal because they can blame it on someone.
So if we're thinking about the potential of all...
We can work in harmony, is what I'm saying. We can paint in harmony.
Yes, we can paint
in harmony.
As long
as we realize we create the canvas.
While still being individuals.
Of course. Diversity, yeah. I love it. You got blue, I got green, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, if we work in harmony, taking full responsibility.
Well, Jeff, do you think that we are actually present in all of these universes at the same time, or that we are just involved in creating them and we're sort of awaiting our turn to pass through them?
Well, I guess a simplistic metaphor would be our own perceptional system, which really isn't... a broad, comprehensive thing. It's really a filtering mechanism to shut things down so that we're not overwhelmed. We're just dealing with a little small piece of it at a time. So to answer your question directly, yeah, I think that we exist in all those different dimensions simultaneously. But,
I agree.
We're not aware of it. And you're talking about attention. What we can pay attention to is, you know, what we experience. Now, some of us are getting a little are developing some abilities where we can experience a little more broadness than maybe we did, you know, or I did 10 or 15 years ago. But that's still just the tip of the iceberg in terms of all of the dimensions or universes or however you want to refer to that, that I'm actually, existing in, creating in.
Well, what happens
very well my direct experience of it is kind of limited to my little life here.
What happens if you're able to become more aware of those other existences and you're able to draw from either experience in or memories from those existences to this one and apply it? What happens?
Become more pervasive.
You're asking me what happens when I'm able to do that?
Yeah, what happens
To go with the artist metaphor, you know, then it gets all the more depth and comprehensive and more breadth and more enrichment and more colors and more hues and...
more diversities, more beauty, more harmonies.
This
is definitely cool. I'm glad
you... It sounds like life becomes immensely more interesting.
It's a great Super Bowl.
You know, just a quick little personal thing. I had a near-death experience when I was 5, and we're just as soon as stayed over there, but got sent back. And so in terms of being in the body, I forgot how y'all were putting it earlier in the broadcast, but it's been a little bit of an opposite struggle for me because I keep trying to find ways to value being in the body, because that's less comfortable, less familiar. Been harder for me to figure out how to create, you know, and how to contribute in the flesh, because the spiritual side of things has always been, since I was 5, you know, all the more real and all the more familiar and a whole lot more blissful than the struggles and the little challenges. And, you know, you talk about people going to work and making money and that sort of thing, and I do that because I have a family and I have bills to pay and so on, but I don't really make too much of that. I mean, I think what the Buddhists call right livelihood. I'm a therapist, and so I like to help people, and I think I'm do okay with that. But I just seem not have a job. I just seem be out floating around, I don't know, making music. Or
I know exactly what you mean. Exactly. Right now I'm talking on the radio, and that's my 3 hours a week of absolute heaven, doing what I love doing, hearing from people who love what they do, and sharing that with the world.
Your name,
I don't really have any problems in my life.
Mr. Bird?
Jeff Bird.
Except you were talking about vision, you know, and I do some energy healing and so on. I've seen a lot of miraculous cures of all sorts of things, but I can't seem to get my own eyesight straightened out. That's
I know exactly what you mean there. So, Ken, or Jeff, are you familiar with some of the terms that we've been talking about attention and intention and clearing and things like that? Have you heard of those before?
Well, the clearing was a new a word for me. And I know you're all referring to something specifically. I'm sorry?
Yeah, let me just clarify. Clearing. Okay, in the beginning of the broadcast, we were talking about the being as a composite. The being has a soul, and the soul so close to the heart, the seat of emotion, the feeling, and then the mind, and then the body. What is so close to being is his or her soul. And what happens is that it collects, and what it collects can be traumatic. Now that's what dams up the being's life energy. Create abundance and really flow. It's like putting Windex on the soul and resolving and confronting and, in essence, clearing some of the things that block up our essence. This life is to evolve the soul. And as we started this hour, Brooks indicated, you know, certain things are painful and we learn our lessons from them. It's a dichotomy there. On one end of the sword, it's that cuts towards experience, but we don't reach as much as we used to. We've learned to stop reaching. And we're supposed to gather tools in life. And if we don't reach, we put the box on top of it, and we close the lid, and our tools get rusty because we don't want to reach. We don't want to get burnt anymore. But this clearing, what happens, I found, is that it is such a relief to unblock and get these soul wounds off. And I never met a human being that didn't have their collection of them. And we form a scab over that wound, and it's a wall. And we don't communicate spiritually anymore. We're concerned too much. We think too much. We have internal chatter. These things can come off. And what happens is then we start to flow. We are invisible fabric. We start to become prolific and pervasive. We start to go back to our basic nature when we were kids, when the grass is greener, things of this nature. Our soulmates recognize us. We start operating authentically because we're not so much scared anymore. We don't pull in what we're scared. We don't pull in what we're... You know, I met a great philosopher. He goes, Ken, you're going to get resist. And I don't look at that.
So you're saying a soul wound is like...
It literally pulls in with fear.
Somebody has a bad thing happen to them and they say...
It's going to happen again and again.
I'm never going to let that happen again.
It happens. It echoes.
So they actually set themselves up for it to happen again and again and again.
Phenomenally, yes.
Wow.
This is where we find victims. The damsel in distress. Well, I'll never. And their family warns them, please don't ever go out and fall in love with a bully. The damsel in distress... That's a game. And they do it again and again and again. Because that soul wound, it pulls it into them. And
wow.
I get analytical about that.
And so clearing does what with this soul wound? How do you just simply Windex it off the spirit?
So simple, it's going to lose you. If anything that persists that's unwanted, yet thoroughly viewed, will vanish. Because it's your attention, it's your divine truth that gets rid of the story, gets rid of the lie, gets rid of the game. And you ascend above that game. Or another way, it's trace, face, and erase. But these soul wounds have such anguish. That the being can deny it and get back with the social mask, everything's fine, have a nice day, and if I share this anguish. So clearing is deductive, subtractive. It's very subtractive. There is no therapy. There's nothing that happens to you. This is simply a spiritual connection with another person who is trained in the art of listening and gets the person to take responsibility for their problem by getting them bigger than their problem.
Wow.
In essence, the being would have never had that happen to them in the first place if they didn't love so much.
Does that make sense to you, Jeff?
I have to say that a lot of what Ken is saying is garbled. I'm on a cell phone. I don't know if that's what the problem is. So I'm probably only getting about every third word.
Oh, I see.
So I appreciate the idea of clearing. I mean, I guess that's part of how I think about it, not in the same way. And I understand you have your own methodology and maybe even some software or something you've developed. But I think of it in terms of maybe energetic, you know, just some of the healing work like Qigong or energy therapies, or even in a psychological level, clearing egoic stuff, you know, the ego being that part of developed our own individual survival, I'll say just real briefly, which is the part that separates us and leads to all sorts of, distorted, separate thinking, defensiveness, you know, negative emotions, all that sort of thing that all needs to be cleared in order to be operating out of a spirit of unity and community and all the kinds of things you're talking about, I believe.
Well, if I get word, I love here, what you have to share. What you're saying is... closer to truth than most people speak. And what you have to share, I accept 100% of. Totally understand you. And the courage of your path and your conviction, your mind, the searching of the truth, it indicates that I'm definitely not alone, because I want what we're talking about to be in vogue, to be in fashion.
Awesome. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our second hour. Jeff, I really appreciate the phone call. It's so good to hear from you again. And, you know, please don't be a stranger. Come back and talk with us again.
Well, I'm loving what you're doing here, and it was nice to meet you over the wires here, or whatever that is, Ken. And I hope we cross paths. I'm very interested in what you're doing out there.
Yeah,
and Brooks, keep up the good work, man. This is unbelievable stuff that you're putting out there, and it's all part about getting everybody to critical mass. And so you're sure
all
doing
right.
your bit.
All right, I appreciate it. And we'll
y'all take care.
We'll be back after these messages. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio. Space shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you know someone who loves the space program, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it also allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers at X Squared Radio is the company that will plant a tree on public lands somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. You know, we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service. So you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gift for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio.
This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. Statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, and our guest tonight is Ken Payne. He has a website. It's called searchforjob.com. You are in the market for better employment or a higher calling in life, then by all means, go to that website. Check it out. You might be amazed. Now, I also wanted to bring to your attention in the news, you know that Congresswoman Pelosi has called a Council on Global Warming. This is going to bring a lot of attention to a couple of high-energy topics. One is, of course, the environment and what each of us can do to make it a little cleaner for the rest of the planet. The other is the topic of energy, probably the biggest contributor to the concept that we are contributing to the warming of the planet, the damage of the planet, is the consumption of fossil fuels. Now, we've been rather easy on that this winter in the United States. We're not really burning heating oil, per se. And our use of gasoline has actually dropped a little bit or flattened out, and that has caused a softening in the price of oil as the demand has leveled off or even dropped just a little bit, and inventories are rising. But that doesn't change the fact that we're still belching a lot of CO2 and carbon monoxide and hydrocarbons into the atmosphere. So what we're going to do here at X Squared Radio for the month of February is we are going to concentrate on the subject of new energy. Now, I know you've heard this from other websites and other radio programs, but trust me, we're going to get to a level of this, not just political and social, but also technological. You are going to be absolutely amazed at the technology that is just waiting, just beyond the wings of the stage of our planet, waiting to come into service. Some of this technology is so amazing and so powerful that it will do for the world what the microchip did for the world. Just do a little thinking about that next time you pick up your MP3 player or sit down in front of your computer. What the microchip has done for us, some of this technology will do for energy. And it's going to change everything. It's going to change the way we drive. It's going to change the way we heat our homes. And I don't mean we're going to go back to buggy whips and bicycles. It is going to empower a level of growth in technology and in lifestyle for our planet that can take us to the next level of our metamorphosis. So you definitely want to stay tuned in for the month of February. And the climate politically, financially, and technologically is changing. And of course, X Squared Radio is going to be right there for you. So tonight we are talking about concepts of eternality that grace our consciousness from time to time. And by consciousness, I mean our awakeness. I don't mean when you fall asleep and go unconscious and even dream lucidly.
I mean your day-to-day interactions, one with another, one with your place of employment, whether you work with machines or whether you work with people, and definitely with the way you work with one another in your loving relationships and your creating relationships. This program tonight with Ken Payne is going to have some information for you, not just something to think about, but something to do, something to involve yourself with that may, like our earlier callers you heard tonight, have an effect that will change your life. It will put the old you far behind you and put the new you, this new neighborhood, as it were, this new way of thinking, a new way of dealing with the stress and the challenges that come to you in life, so that life becomes exciting. Life becomes fulfilling. You wake up in the morning with a desire to experience like you never, ever thought you would have. A desire like you had when you got up as a teenager to face the day, but with the wisdom and skill levels of an adult. Believe me, it changes everything. So I'm welcoming back my guest, Ken Payne. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
All right. So this hour, I want to talk a lot about not just the mechanics of and the metaphysics of, but the benefits of the process of clearing. Now, this word I hear is kind of a buzzword. I've been to several conventions. I've been to classes. I've been to workshops. And that word is bandied about a lot. But I have to tell you, in my personal experience with the same clearing method that Robert experienced, I see a huge difference in what clearing means to you and your personeering methods than it does to these others who use the word rather loosely. So I want to go into that more in depth in this hour. Let me ask you a question which might start it off. Suppose I don't really consider myself having a lot of soul wounds. I'm just an ordinary person, but I'm underemployed and I'm underutilized, and I'm not really happy or fulfilled in my current lifestyle. How would I go about this process?
Well, as far as the actual process, let's look at that process. Let's clear off the misunderstandings of what clearing is. Clearing's nothing that happens to you. You do it yourself. It's a lot of work. I've met a lot of people who come into clearing, and it can be approached two ways. I personally believe it is at a level of enlightenment, empowerment. I use it for executive coaching. Those who pretend that they don't have problems are not candidates for clearing. The being creates his own problems. And he gets tired of them, and he doesn't reach as much, and he's lost his vigor. Now, that's normal. So when you say, the normal guy is going to come along, and he's going to approach the subject of clearing as though, well, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't need to see a therapist. I agree. Most people don't need to see a therapist. That's something that happens to you. Hypnosis and all kinds of clearing technologies. This is a higher form. It's more for the elite because this brand of clearing means taking full responsibility to get bigger than your problem. In order to get bigger than your problem, you must realize that you're creating it. Well, not a lot of people want to admit that. Now, think about that.
Yeah, when you think about creating this problem, a lot of people that I know of it, they tend to think of their problems as they did this to me, or they are standing in my way, or they are evil. What is it that they're really seeing?
What they're really seeing is that it's happening to them, and they have this, generally speaking, they have this concept deep, deep down inside. They just can't justify away. a good candidate for clearing knows that you can justify all you want to. You can deny everything that you can deny. We're great creatures of mimicry, and denial is really popular on this particular planet. But a good candidate for clearing has had enough. They want happiness. The path of happiness is taking responsibility. I created this drama, and I'm tired of it. Why does this continue to happen? And I'm tired of blaming external forces. And I'm a force, you're a force, we're all forces. Why is this happening to me? Because deep, deep down inside, they know they're a lot more powerful than they're letting on. Now, when I come across a being that is willing to admit that, I have a person who knows certain things the average person doesn't know. That is an excellent candidate to come in and get bigger than a problem because they know they created it. Now, this is where we go back to the beginning of the program, and every being on this planet is more than capable, actually it's their basic nature, to admit, I did it. And I'm tired of doing it. And if I can stop it, I would have done it by myself years ago. The process because it is actually a truth technology. We'll start a viewer because we believe that the viewer creates his own space. I'm going to do a little sidetrack here, Brooks. Remember when we first started talking, I said, can you imagine the end of infinity, the end of the universe? And you go, well, yeah, but I think we're creating it by our view alone. You remember that?
That's correct. Yeah. Our imagination creates the universe.
I believe that's a magnificent being who's been in search for truth for a long time. He's willing to take the level of divinity of the full responsibility. I'm not saying that clearing is for the form of clearing that I proclaim is the best. And someone, please. I am very much an explorer. I'm not a... I'm so much an open thinker. If someone brings to me a higher form, I'll rush to it because I'm a seeker of truth. I'm a seeker of self.
Hey, I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Oh, hello, Brooks and Ken. It's Crystal again.
Hi, Crystal.
Hi, I'm calling from British Columbia. Yeah, I'm really enjoying the show. I missed just that last little bit that Ken said because I'm on the phone, and again, it's a little garbled when I'm on the phone. This is something I never expected to hear talked about on a radio show. I've gone through a clearing myself. But at the time I didn't know the word for it. I called it my transformation. If that might be another way of putting it. But yeah, it was basically that going to looking at your life and saying, I'm the one doing this. You know, I'm responsible for this, and having to really face yourself, I guess, and admitting that I want to change things. You know, and there's no, and not being angry with anyone around you or blaming is the big thing too. It's really a different perspective that's changed my life profoundly.
Did you go through clearing with a practitioner or a facilitator, or is this something that you did on your own?
No, it was like just out of the blue, I had this experience of these beings from another, I call it another dimension, that came into my life.
Oh, man.
I was quite willing to accept it. I thought, this is, I guess, what I've been looking for. And it's like I knew that this was something I had to do to move on. And so I just, I was getting all kinds of coaching from them, you know, and I was going through some horrible times, but I didn't really look at it that way. I looked at it as, gee, there's someone here with me helping me, and I can do this, you know. And I mean, it ended up dissolving my marriage, but you know, I can honestly say we parted friends.
Yeah.
You know, because I think it is maybe we both went through this sort of a transformation, and I cleared so many things. You know, I realized my insecurities, my jealousies, you know, things that were just holding me back from living my life and my highest potential. Now I'm growing in a whole different way, and I'm learning all over again, I think.
I agree.
Yeah, it's like a whole new process.
Yeah, transmutation is a great word.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's yeah, very interesting.
Well, I appreciate it. Ken and I have been talking for a number of months, and we have been discussing coming on the radio and talking about these concepts, and it's been a little bit of a challenge. You know, I'm a scientist, and I'd rather sink my teeth into a math formula or some vision or image on a telescope, but this, too, is the development of the human soul, of the human society. And if we think of the universe, as we were speaking in our first hour, of literally coming from nothing and knowing and having knowledge, then each of us as individuals, in fact, every single one of us collectively, make up this universe by our imaginations.
We project it.
Yes, we project it. And without one of us, if one of us were to disappear, the entire thing would fall apart.
It would dissipate, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, too, it's with an individual thing. I think, to me, it felt almost like I had come to a peak. You know, a peak, you know, instead of looking at my life as linear, it was like, not to a peak, but let's say the middle of the circle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's... like, because now I really feel like I'm going back. Anyway, I know like I'm going forward in 3D sort of thing, but I'm going back to who I really am.
Yeah, basically.
To remembrance.
Pardon me?
Going back to remembrance.
We talked about peeling the onion and the layers.
Remembrance,
what you're
exactly.
About is,
you know,
going
and
back to basic nature.
Yeah, and that's what these beings that were helping me kept saying to me.
Well,
you're
pretty powerful to have these guys hanging
Pardon
around,
me?
Though. You're pretty powerful to have these guys.
I couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, but they kept saying that to me. You must remember. You know, yeah. I'd ask them, I want the answers, and they'd say, but you know, you just have to remember.
Right.
And it would frustrate me, and I'd think, remember what?
Right.
What? How can I remember if I can't remember?
Old
But, you know, it eventually came.
That's beautiful. I appreciate you sharing. How would you encourage folks with your experience to continue to travel along the path of basic nature and full responsibility?
I didn't quite hear the first of your question.
How would you encourage other listeners to continue on the path of basic nature and full responsibility?
Oh, to continue?
Yeah. Is it worth it?
How to continue? I think how I continue is, for some reason, I'm able to catch myself when I start to fall back, or if I start to create the old pattern. To continue is to just listen to shows like Brooke, you know, to find other people to know that, because sometimes it feels like you're so alone in this. You know,
you're not alone.
I
know that feeling.
Pardon me?
You're not alone, and I know that feeling whenever... Crystal, when we started the show, I wanted to encourage folks to realize that the authentic self, the being, not the body, not the solid, not the what they think. And I know what it feels like to try to walk that pretense walk of what they think. And what we're talking about is and so importantly authentic. I assure you, Crystal, you're not alone.
Yeah, well, that's I think why I'm drawn to. Yeah, that's why I'm drawn to, and you get to be very selective, too. You learn to be...
Oh, highly.
No, I'm not judgmental. I don't mean that, because I think I've become accepting. But I don't have to involve myself in things that do bring down my integrity. You know, but at the same time, I don't feel like I'm judging. I feel I'm selective in my life, and that's made me happier. Because now I'm doing things more things I enjoy, and my goals are more all things I didn't think I could do before. I didn't think I had the brains or the, you know, there's things that your life just changes. And to keep on with it, I guess, is just, well, you just learn to support yourself, I guess. You know, and you try and find help along the way when you can, and encouragement, and I don't know if there's any real formula, but listening to a show like this is really uplifting and encouraging.
And oh, those are great complimentary words.
Hey, Crystal.
Well, so I thank both of you, so.
Hey, Crystal.
Uh-huh.
I love you.
I love you, too. I love you both.
Wonder.
Thanks, guys.
All right. I feel it. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, that I love to get calls like that. I love to get mail like that. It just, it makes all this worthwhile. It sure does.
What's the acknowledgement of another person's on the same track of authentic self?
Yes.
We find ourselves, again, making less of our abilities to fit in. This concept of fitting in, can you really be authentic and try to fit in at the same time?
Well, I see people try to walk that line in their lives, and I do not see anyone that does it well. At some point, they're fooling themselves, and they give up their integrity in order to fit in.
I understand. The herding instinct, what would they think? Seems to be one of the most popular games on this particular planet, but in any event, I embrace diversity. I like it when people emanate like she emanates, and she's obviously not concerned about what the masses think. I mean, we're reaching towards, let's go into eons, and let's go into ages, let's go into something that's where we're heading. I don't want to come off as a prophet, but there is a collective wave of those who are free thinkers, and I believe that we're more artistic. I believe that they're the creator class beings, the ones willing to take full responsibility, don't want to necessarily bow down to any, or not bow down, you know. Let the think, the popular masses, call me blasphemous, and that's fine, that's your choice. I have my choice too. But let's just say that in this case, where we're heading, where this planet is heading, is towards a level of fuller responsibility. We're heading is toward clearer, less war. Look at the physical universe as a petri dish. Look at it as something that when you put your energy on, you flow. And I'm going to explain to you how this works. Now, I think a lot of people have heard of this experiment. They put, I don't know, 100 petri dishes on a revolving table, sterile environment, but the scientists were only allowed to view just one. And in that experiment, after a period of time, they opened up the contained environment, they pulled out the petri dish that they were allowed to view, set it to the side, and the other 99 were in the standard deviation. They didn't change. But the one that the scientists were allowed to view was off the scale. Why do I bring that up? Because it is our divine view that changes the very particles. It is us. It is spirit. It is the being. It is the creative force. It is the perception. It is the view. We are the ones who are manifesting the physical plane. We are the ones who's changing the petri dish of the physical universe or the world of motion. It is us. Now, when we wake up to that level of full responsibility, we won't have so much fear. We won't fall in the traps of the illusion of death. We'll realize, Brooks, I assure you, we'll realize that we were in control all the time. And if we could create anything, now let's get a critical mass, let's get a tipping point. Who's to say, who would stop us from ending war? How would we do that? Well, we wouldn't agree that it's just okay to be have our sons and daughters drafted to feed the insanity machine of war. That, no, that's not okay anymore. We actually would reach a tipping point, a critical mass of us creating this petri dish where we would have to look at that and go, well, that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I always thought what a great idea would be to just set up a boxing ring and let the two leaders that want to go to war go down there on public TV and just duke it out. Just the two of them.
Yeah.
And that's the war. It's done.
And we as the audience, we would see that as quite insane, wouldn't we?
It would be good entertainment, wouldn't it?
Well, sure. Let them critters do what them critters do. It gets to the point where when you rise above the solids and you take full responsibility and you start to look at the insanities, who's to say that what the way we speak now, 20 years from now, 15 years from now, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, the way we speak now is the truth, is.
So what you're saying is this wave, this intention, this critical mass is sort of a constructive interference of multiple intentions, the group intentions of sovereign beings focused on one level of responsibility, one level of peace.
Yeah, what we put our attention on grows. What we put our life energy, our view, our percept grows.
So if we put our intention on war, then war grows. If
we ignore it.
If we put our intention on peace and cooperation and expanding and growing toward a greater understanding and a greater explorational spirit of our
embrace it.
Then we change.
Turn off the TV. Turn off bad news.
Yeah.
Don't
turn on Andy
it.
Of Mayberry.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, great lessons in Andy of Mayberry. I'll have to tell you about it sometime.
Yeah, simplicity is truth. Beauty, elegance, simplicity, and truth. It's best.
I see what you mean. Now, that might seem, especially in, I was in Washington, D.C. last week, and I have to tell you, I've been to the city, oh, a half a dozen times in my life. That city is on a war footing. There are barricades up at every street that you couldn't drive an armored vehicle through. Police everywhere, barricades blocking even the flow of people through the area around Congress and the White House. That is a changed city, I'm telling you. There is a feeling of, right now there's actually a feeling of fresh air going on up there because of the change of political climate. But I still don't think they live in reality, because when I get out and about and I'm speaking to people and learning from people, I'm listening to where their intention is, where their interest is, it is so far away from cable news view of the world. I just think that we are at a very close point where this critical mass, this wave, this intentional concentrated life force in one direction, completely different from the war footing upon which they seem to direct all of their economics, it's going to take over. It's going to change everything.
Yeah, you'll see. This insanity is becoming antiquated because we've evolved ourselves. There's too many people out here that know that, yeah, it doesn't have to be this way. And you learn to ignore a lot of things, and they won't have an audience. Things grow because of audience.
Yeah, that's right. Market share drops, and all of a sudden, so do the budgets.
Turn off the radio. Turn off the bad news. Don't quit spreading bad news. Don't pass the poison. You know what? Don't grow up. Here's a good one for you. The fundamentalist, who's really scared and has to find and cling. And I tell you, this is a matter of clinging. Solid, this is a matter of clinging. It's very insecure. Now, when I was a baby, my mother stuck her finger out. I would grab it and I'd cling to it. I felt so insecure. But I've grown past that. I don't cling to things anymore. I don't have to shrink myself down to fear. Now, you'll find that souls evolve and they'll stop clinging and they'll realize I'm responsible, you're responsible, we did this. We don't have to look to something external and blame it or say, I want a bicycle like Johnny's got down the street. And all the, praying to volcanoes or whatever. Now, it's pretty immature to do that. And, I don't know, 20 years ago, 200 years ago, they burned me at the stake for saying something like that. But I know, and you know, and most of your listening audience knows, and my family knows. Most people I talk in business knows. I mean, we all have awakened. And we're reaching a tipping point. We're reaching a critical mass, the 100 monkey theory. Brooks, you know, we're waking up.
It's a marvelous feeling to be awake.
We are waking up. This is the quickest, the most. Well, quick is good in my book. I like quick. Fast. To a game is philosopher, speed is king. So I am playing Catalyst. Catalyst speeds things up.
Well,
we need four people to talk the way we talk. It's delightful to hear folks waking up every day and going, you know what? We did this. There is no big daddy in the sky that we can blame this on. It's the immature soul that clings and grabs the finger and has the fundamentalist thing going on for them. And, you know, the insanity of all the war that goes with that. Because it's so easy to blame stuff on. But here's a good one for you. You know, Brooks?
Yeah?
If everyone woke up to the fact that they were bigger than the physical universe, that we were emanating above space and time, and that we were totally responsible for creating that petri dish, what would happen?
Oh my goodness. You know, what would happen to a company with, say, 30 employees, just a small business but a reasonable sized business, if every employee in that company was on the purpose of that company?
The mission, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That company, there's no way, not only is there no way they could fail, but their success would be beyond the imagination of everyone in that company and even their competitors.
I love money. Money is trust, and trust is money. People who shun money shouldn't do that. You should really flow it. I think that if you took a look at the economy and realized it was a flow, and that every time a dollar changed hands, we could pave the streets in gold with the currency of changing hands and taxes. You know, people don't trust. You know, just let go of it. I mean, you know, just talk, you know, and you know, think about flow and think about money and think about currency and think about, like, I'm going too fast here, but think about every time a dollar changes hands, what happens? Trust goes up significantly, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's only when the hoarding happens, when somebody sticks billions of dollars in the bank and says, it's mine, and I'm not letting you have it.
Yeah, like they're really going to hold it. Take it. What are they going to do with it? It's funny.
But the point is, they stop the flow.
The streets get a little bit wider. The streets get a little bit cleaner. Schools get a little bit better. If people saw trust and money as the same thing, the exchange rate. Now, my mind goes pretty fast, so I'm going to go ahead and talk about vision. Watch this. Ready?
Ready.
Vision. Now, when we wake up to the fact that we are creating this petri dish, just like the scientists, they view it, their divine view. Okay, change that one particular petri dish. When we wake to the full responsibility, we release this gripping, this clinginess, and we turn it into art. And we trust each other as souls. We don't give so many people soul wounds because we respect their divinity. You know how much fun it's going to be on this planet? It's going to be like this. The reason why people don't come to this planet is, like, 100 years ago, Teddy Roosevelt went on a safari. And, you know, there are certain places on the planet you just don't go because, you know, you might not trust them, right? We're waking up past that. We're not critters. We're not beasts anymore. We don't have to live by survival and power and the gun and all that. You know, we're going to wait past that. You know, we fortunately went past the atomic, we're going to blow each other up in the 60s and 70s. We're past that. We are now waking up to the fact that we are doing this. No one's doing this to us. We have to wake up. Now, watch this. There are dimensions. There are UFOs, what are you going to call them? Me and my daughter, Gloria, we used to play with UFOs. We were psychically connected to them, and we could permeate with them. We were telepathic with them, and we said, you know, do this, and we played with them just like you play with a pet. Because they're of a higher dimension, and they are psychic. You are psychic. Now, the more enlightened, the more responsibility you take for being a creator class being. We really are. I mean, you can't not create. I mean, everything that you do is a create. And when we wake up to our full responsibility, we will literally open up the cosmic gates of trade. We won't be scared of anything that's not like us. We won't fall into the herding instinct. We will embrace diversity. Now, if you go to a place, there's nowhere on this, the information age has opened up so many avenues of trade that, you know, people, you know, trust and flow and, you know what's going to end up happening, Brooks?
What?
You know what's going to happen. What's going to happen is this. We're going to create a beautiful planet because it's ours. And it's okay to share that. It's okay to open up dimensions. It's okay. Because we're spiritual. Get out of the solids and realize there are all kinds of phenomena that we can't see. And when we learn to trust ourselves and take full responsibility as spiritual creators, we're going to have some beautiful art. We'll be able to share that art with our cosmic brothers. And, you know, we're not going to go, all that. You know, all that fear goes away. When our fear goes away, the mirror effect, we can embrace diversity.
Wow. So we are about creating that world right now, aren't
we?
Yeah,
we are. You know we are. Everybody knows it consciously, subconsciously. There are certain people are scared of it, but you know what? That fear will go away. You know, it goes back to the beginning. This illusion of death, this, we got to create scarcity. Because, you know, we're in an ever-expanding infinity. Why do we create scarcity and an ever-expanding abundance of infinity? Well, because we create the illusion of death. Once we really wake up, and you know, you can wake up a lot of people with what I just said, then we're going to evolve our soul, our collective soul, to a level of embracing diversity. We won't be scared when things that will come. The reason why they don't come is because they know we're scared. They know what you know, and she knows. They know we're not willing to take the full responsibility of our own create.
Huh. So in our realm of work, when we're choosing what we're going to do for our career, or we're at a point in our lives when we're ready to change careers, or we find ourselves, and in these tumultuous times, out of work because of the industries that maybe haven't flourished so well in our society here in this country, and they find themselves on the market, so to speak, looking for a job. Let's say they come to searchforjob.com, and they come into Kenpain and they say, I am a process engineer, or I am a quality engineer, or I am a plant manager, and I'm looking for a place to work. They're not going to get the usual treatment with you, are they? They're going to go through a process where they have to tell a little bit more and discover a little bit more about themselves so that they can find what they will truly be happy doing and who would be truly happy having them. How does that process work?
Well, what I've done is I've developed a very cool way of transparency. I'll talk to a client, and if he's not willing to embrace concepts that we're talking about, well, I'll just basically throw him another body, and he'll, you know, and that's what he can have. I can only give him what they can have. When I come across a client that embraces responsibility on a more spiritual plane, I know I've got a person who's ethical. Actually, he's above ethics. He's pretty much artistic and creative and entrepreneurial. He's creative, is what it is. And what he probably doesn't want is another three-dimensional, flat person coming in as a robot with a social veneer going through the motions. What he's looking for is he's looking to embrace that individual, to really blossom them towards their own creativity. It's a beautiful thing when you actually select a client that is willing to embrace the being for their creativity. These are entrepreneurial companies. Their mission statements, if you really are interested in this subject, if you can go down into solids again, you know, it's fine. Go look for companies, read their mission statement, because it is their spirit, and look like Merck. Merck is a beautiful company. Look at their mission statement. You know that if you go to work for Merck or Google and other places that are embracing the same concepts that we talk about, the human condition, then you know they will embrace your creativity. They will. They're wellsprings to blossom at. Now, simply, when you go, you know, I'm not going to try to sell my business. I mean, I don't want to turn this into money. I've got no problem. Don't want to promote it. But just look at your life and look at what you want and go to an interview and express yourself the way you would authentically express yourself. And if they poo-poo you, please, please, run away as fast as you can. If they want to turn you into a robot and two-dimensional, flat, you're a machine, you know, we're heading towards the age of self-determinism. Self-determined that we, I mean, I am the self, and Brooks, you're the self. You know, we are so creative. I mean, we put so many limitations on ourselves. We go to these companies, and we have 10 times more to offer than they could possibly embrace. And we hush because of our preconceived notion that they could possibly have all of us.
Well, or that or we want to fit in, and we don't want to show rock them boat, that we're so brilliant that they're going to have an allergic reaction to us.
Yeah.
And spew us back out into the ranks of the unemployed.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Well, just be you and continue to be creative and express yourself, your authentic self. Don't chase the dollar. I mean, you know, the dollar's, you know, I love the dollar because it means trust in me. I mean, I had no problem with abundance. I find that I've become more abundant by expressing authentic self. I don't sell as much. I select people who, just like Crystal said, you know, become very selective. Yeah, believe me. You'll find your audience if you're very selective. You start to separate the wheat from the chaff. You'll find it. Now, we talk about purpose. You know, this software I've got, you know, the great thing about matchmaking is that you get a good mirror effect with the software. This company is a teacher purpose. It's their mission statement. It means love. This company is a healer mission. Well, then they will embrace you if you want to come in and do turnarounds, and they expect you to come in and heal them. It means a higher level of integrity. You have to basically be a leader. Then the higher purposes are catalyst mission statements. They mean to come in and they want to collect folks who are wanting things to be really fast.
and they want to change this really fast. Well, that takes a whole lot of integrity and leadership and authenticity. Those are hard to find. They're pinnacle companies. What you'll find is most companies are all about, they want you to stabilize and go and, you know, fit in with the herd, and there's plenty of companies like that. Then there's the company that wants you to sacrifice, and that's even worse. That's where you're going to sacrifice yourself. You're going to sacrifice your family. You're going to sacrifice your integrity. And there's so many of those companies out there, and they look at you as a number. So what Crystal was saying, with Jeff Bird and Robert Troop and anyone else that called in, basically saying is, enough is enough. You have to be selective. You have to go into life with authenticity, and you have to basically say, no, I'm not going to play that game. I'm above that. I'm not going to get my attention hooked into your game. I'm very selective. And then you lose that selfiness, and I got to, you know, put on a pretense mask to, all that stuff seems to be going to the wayside. Because we realize that, in essence, you know, it is us. It's you, folks. You're creating your life. No one else is doing that for you. You have to take that level of responsibility.
So, like,
bigger than your problem.
Like the original creation, when we were in the nothing in the universe, we realize we have to come to a realization in our lives, in our employment, in our careers, where we stand up and we say, I am. I am. I am. It's a conjugation of the word be. You be. And then you do. And then you will have.
Yeah. You gotta be.
So we implore you, Earth Explorers, to be in your job. And if you can't be where you are, I suggest you lay plans. Find some place where you can be. Because I think that's the most important thing in life, don't you, Ken?
Yeah, be, do, have.
Be, do, and have. Well, we have about 2.5 minutes left. I can't believe how fast these 3 hours go. It's
really
like,
good. Let me give you some acknowledgement, Brooks.
All right.
Hey, Brooks.
Yes?
Not a lot of people on this planet have the courage to do what you're doing. Courage is a great thing. It's so close to desire. Desire for what? Truth. So keep seeking. Keep searching. Be an example. You're a great example, Brooks. You know what? We should all be more like Brooks Agnew.
I don't know.
Well, why not? There's plenty of limitations on that consideration. But you should all operate a little bit above our own consideration. We're bogged down in ethics. Get out of ethics. If you have integrity, you don't need to consider other people's thoughts. Brooks, I think that you're not considering too much about what other people think, because if you were, then you probably wouldn't have the audacity of hope to communicate on the level that you are.
I do have audacity, if nothing else.
You are unyielding to your own integrity. I believe that you're one of the very few pioneers that will continue to lead us in a direction where we operate from authenticity, that we recognize our spiritual concept, studying the concepts, our being is the truth. You're the truth, I'm the truth, he's the truth, we're the truth, we all operate various levels of truth. But you know what? If we're not spiritual, if we didn't do this, and all we are particles, oh, I'm not even going to entertain it, because that's like me riding on the back of a pink hippopotamus, and that's what it's about. I know that's not true. Brooks.
Yes, sir.
You're so real. You're real, man. You are real. You are so real. There are so many people that you have led to come out of the closet of the what would they think and all that stuff that people do. You're waking up a planet, is what you're doing, Brooks.
Sounds
you're
like fun.
You're waking up this planet. It is fun.
It's a fun, Earth mission, and I enjoy it. I have to give high compliments to my producer Don at BBS Radio for encouraging me to take on the responsibility of forming a talk radio program, and I appreciate the listeners that come on and listen. Some of them listen, and occasionally they'll write me an email, and you have no idea how good of a payday it is when you send me those emails and tell me what this program means to you, and I appreciate that more than you know. And don't forget, coming up February 10th, that weekend is the Conscious Life Expo. Don't forget to get yourself to Los Angeles if you're near there. If you're not, that's okay too, but if you can get there, that's good. There's going to be a lot of great speakers there, George Noory, Richard Hoagland, a host of others, and myself. I'll be speaking Sunday evening, and one of my short films will be airing during the film festival on Saturday night, so you don't want to miss that. I'll be there. Please come up, shake my hand, let's talk, let's meet, I'll autograph your book, anything you want. Don't forget, in May is the conference in Hawaii with Michael Sala with Exopolitics. I'll be speaking there. And then in August, there is the ET conference at Mount Shasta. And don't forget the Science, Spirit, and Earth Transformation conference in August at Trout Lake, Washington. All of those will be linked at X Squared Radio. You can find them by going to x2-radio.com. I appreciate Ken Payne, my guest tonight. Thank you so much.
Hey, Brooks, I want to bless your audience with pure admiration. I'll tell you what. Great. They're not on the outside of me. And I'm not on the outside of them.
I appreciate it.
We are one. We are Source.
We are Source.
Rock
Very
on.
Good, my friend. I'll talk to you later. I got to play my exit.
All right. Love you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. And here we go, Earth Explorers. Don't forget, we'll be back next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.